Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now. And support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets. My name is Paul Hill. I'm delighted today to be able to speak to CEO Adam Holland and Group Finance Director Will Wilkins of MPAC, a global high-speed packaging and automation solutions group servicing the healthcare, food and beverage, and clean energy sectors. So welcome, gents.
Thanks, Paul. Nice to be with you.
Yeah, well, big congrats on this morning's really strong and in line 2023 results, with record bookings and sales up 17% to £114 million, alongside a positive outlook for 2024. But before we sort of dig into the details there, Adam, I don't suppose you could quickly give us a bit of colour on the current demand picture in the sort of the company's main sectors alongside MPAC's key sort of USPs.
Happy to. What do we do? I mean, you said it really well. We're an automation business. We are in packaging machinery, and the markets that we focus on are food and beverage, healthcare, and clean energy. And what drives those markets? Well, I guess fundamentally, it's labor. Labor shortages is one of the largest drivers of the need to automate. You know, I talk to business owners all the time who are struggling with labor shortages in their organizations, and some of the time, automation is a way of solving those problems and enabling those businesses to hit their objectives. And in other cases, there are you know, processes that simply cannot be done without automation. We find that in assembly particularly. So those are the kind of needs that drive the need for automation. And what underpins all of that? Well, it's really fundamental macroeconomics. You know, there are more people on the planet today, so there is an increasing demand for fast-moving consumer goods, and that plays into what we do. GDP growth per capita, you know, rising life expectancy levels, all those really fundamental things combined with labor shortage give a kind of never-ending demand growth for packaging machinery and automation. And you've seen it in the market. So the market last year in 2023 was 2 or 3 percentage points up. It depends a little bit on which geographical sectors you pick and which parts of the kind of automation process you pick. But there's some really good industry data available from the PMMI, and we follow those trends very carefully. Yeah. Nice to see the market grow, but for us in MPAC, you know, the biggest opportunity isn't the market growth; it's the market share. You know, we're very, very proud to have broken through that £100 million mark, £114 million of revenue. You know, it deserves saying a couple of times, doesn't it? But when we look at the market, it's a $50 billion market. You know, Okay. So here we are. Pleased with the performance so far, and we should be, but there's so much more to go at.
And in terms of sort of like the growth in that packaging machinery market, is it been driven by sort of like an upgrade cycle? Because obviously we've got so much technology now being at the coalface to allow operators sort of like, you know, better performance information, better predictive maintenance information, but also operational efficiencies of that. Is a sort of like, it's like buying a new iPhone. It's just the new technology is so much better than the old technology. And therefore, if you don't invest, then you're going to be left behind, uncompetitive on cost.
Yeah. Yes. And more as well. So perhaps I'll give you a couple of different examples, because I think it will set the scene. We do quite a lot in the field of contact lenses within healthcare. And, you know, I don't know if you're a lens wearer, but there's been a trend over recent years for people to move away from monthly disposable lenses to daily disposable lenses. And of course, the benefit of that, if you wear contact lenses, is you're not faffing around with solutions and you're not throwing away bottles of, you know, plastic bottles of solutions at the end of every month. You know, there is the disposal of the contact lenses themselves, but the actual impact is much lower, and it's really easy to use. Now, if you're a contact lens manufacturer, you've suddenly got to deal with the fact that you've got to provide 30 lens pairs a month rather than one lens pair a month. So the demand has gone up 30-fold, you know, in with that trend. And all of those lenses need to be handled and processed and packaged and distributed and so on. So that creates, you know, in that particular industry, an enormous growth in demand and new production lines coming on stream for those reasons. You know, took an example in food and beverage. Often it's new product launches that drive demand. So, you know, we have customers. Often we can't talk about the particular product themselves, because, you know, many of our customers are preparing for a product launch globally, and they don't want to let the cat out of the bag until they're ready to let the cat out. But you know, but those new products drive a need for new production lines, new packaging facilities, and that's where we come in. So it's great fun, you know, it's great fun.
Yeah, and I guess also there's regulation with the environment, isn't there, with types of packaging, because now moving more towards recyclable, but, you know, away from the plastics into sort of like, you know, proper, well, paper or whatever it is, packaging type. So you need at least a new packaging setup anyway.
Yeah, I mean, the majority of what we're involved with today is cardboard recyclable packaging materials.
Yeah, okay.
Obviously, on the assembly side of things, it depends on what we're assembling, whether it's a razor blade cartridge, a contact lens, a battery. The products that we're involved with making in our machines. Our machines assemble as well as package products for our customers. You know, they vary enormously, but that trend of sustainability is really important in our industry. You know, what you don't have to be a packaging expert to think about what it means: reduction in single use plastics. And an elimination of unnecessary packaging. You know, and as a business that is involved with manufacturing machines that package product, am I worried about that? Absolutely not. You know, the ability of companies to be able to contribute to that change and to be able to make those changes effectively is really important. And the companies that will succeed are those that can adapt and you know, deal with those challenges most effectively. And I think, you know, when we think about, you asked about the unique selling points of MPAC, you know, I've been asked it a number of times, and I always come back to the people. We've got some incredible people in our business. And what are they incredible at? They're solving problems. You know, it's not just about designing a machine. It's about thinking about the materials that flow through that machine, the way in which operators use it, the changes that might happen in the lifetime of that machine, and how we build in, the ability to upgrade and modify in the future. All those sorts of challenges our teams are brilliant at solving. And sustainability is just another challenge that good teams can solve. So I'm really excited about it.
Yeah. Okay, good. What about in terms of the pricing environment there? Obviously, volume is going through the roof. You're getting a lot of demand there. But in terms of the pricing, and also being able to deliver that demand, because I think a year and a half ago, we had problems with semiconductors and stuff like that in the supply chain.
Yeah. It's a really interesting market. And many of your viewers won't be familiar with packaging machinery. There are an awful lot of companies out there that make packaging machinery and automation equipment. You know, it's a very, very competitive market space. And we compete daily, not just against businesses of our size and smaller, you know, 140 million isn't small in the industry, but also against some real behemoths up at the sort of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 billion revenue mark. And we compete really effectively against them because of the expertise that we bring to bear on the problems that we solve. So we're in open competition. We're often in open competition. Many of our customers choose us through a competitive tender phase. And the result of that is that we're always competing on price. You know, there's never a point where price is off the table is one of the things that we're focused on. And that sets the price. It's a market price. The profit we make is the difference between that and cost. And to the extent that we can control cost and manage it and pass it on to our customers, if they're inflationary rises, that sets our profitability. I suppose the really good news is that some of the challenges that we're facing in terms of cost pressure are the same challenges that all of our competitors are facing in terms of cost pressure. Mm-hmm. Some of the challenges we face in lead time around semiconductors, and the shortages of semiconductors and chips back a couple of years ago are the same challenges that not just manufacturers in our sector, but probably all manufacturers were facing. If you tried to buy a car in 2022, you'd have found it pretty difficult to get the model you wanted because of semiconductor shortages. So, but we're through a lot of that. We now see semiconductor demand and supply are just about keeping pace with each other. It's not easy, but they're keeping pace. What is different now is the lead time. Lead time for these components is long. And although that the supply chain will deliver on the day they say they'll deliver, that day is further out in the future than it used to be. And that has an impact on us and our customers. Our customers have to place orders earlier than they might otherwise have chosen to if they're going to hit their timescales. And we have a working capital burden to manage because of those extended lead times. And we're doing that really effectively, but it is not easy. Now, that's the challenge we face every day.
Yeah. Okay, and just finishing on the demand side, are you seeing any signs of sort of like sales cycles lengthening? I know that's certainly something that has been sort of talked about by a lot of industrial companies and other sort of businesses, and also destocking. I'm guessing destocking doesn't apply because you're made to order, but if you just give us a couple of words on that, both of those.
Yeah. Certainly the decision timescales are always difficult for people making large capital decisions, and interest rates play into that. Of course they do. Mm-hmm. Interest rate variability affects decision making in our customers. The uncertainty in market demand that they face, causes decision making delays. So the answer is yes. We have a pretty good visibility of the pipeline of prospects that our customers are thinking about. Some of our customers are talking about projects that they might not launch for 18 months. Mm. Many of them are 9 months out, 9 to 12 months out. So our pipeline is pretty long and pretty good and pretty stable. So we generally know what kind of percentage of projects that are being forecast by a customer 9 months out will turn into a real project, in that timescale. What is uncertain is if a customer is intending to place an order next week, will that order come in next week or the week after? And when you're making capital decisions, these are often board decisions. Boards are good at challenging and good at asking difficult questions that take time to answer. So we don't take the decision making by our customers for granted. I've talked a number of times in the public domain about us being a bit of a lumpy business. We could think a customer order is coming in a month's time and it comes in tomorrow, and vice versa. And that causes lumps in our business. And that's not easy, but that is a feature of a business of our size. We have plans to address that. We have very clear plans to address that. And I'm sure we'll talk more about those in due course.
Okay, good. Well, let's move on to the financial highlights then, Will. I mean, obviously, Adam there has certainly driven the top line, say 17%. And I did notice, actually, there was a lot of operating leverage. It came through in the profit. So you've obviously got your finance team done pretty well there and driven cash. Can you just take us through what the sort of the key numbers and the sort of the key moving parts?
Sure, will do, Paul. Thanks. So yeah, a really good set of numbers for MPAC. Results are ahead on all key metrics, and this is really off the back of a particularly strong second half of last year. So we're reporting today order intake up 41% to 118.5 million. Revenue up 17% to 114 million. That's been driven primarily by excellent growth in service revenue. Margins are up from 25% to 27.7%. And we're really pleased to be able to report concurrent growth in revenue and margins. Clearly, it's not easy, but that's been a real highlight for the year. And that's
Is that the mix, Will? Is that the mix coming through, or just better cost management?
It's underpinned really by good project execution and being able to deliver projects at sold margins. So this is about having that now we're free of supply chain issues, which had an impact on operational performance previously, getting back on track to deliver projects as we have a long history of being able to do for sold margins. And that's really the main driver to that growth in margins in 2023.
And it sort of translated into a very strong cash performance, because I remember you in that last 12 months, you've basically put another almost 6 to 7 million on the in the bank.
Absolutely. Cash is dependent to an extent upon timing of deposits relating to order intake. But overall, over the course of the year, we've reduced working capital by more than 20%, down to 13 million. There's still more we can do on driving working capital down. But yeah, we're pleased to be able to say we're back to a net cash position. The prior year, we were a net debt position. That's a mixture of, clearly a good level of profitability in the year and also that reduction in working capital.
Yeah. And just on the EBIT margins, I noticed they ticked up from last year at 4% to 6.8% this year underlying. Obviously, Adam's got some quite stretching targets, which we'll come on to later. But how should investors think about that, Will, going forward as we get that operational gearing coming through, presumably?
We refer to the margins as normalizing during 2023. Certainly, if we look at the second half of the year, clearly we had a very strong second half. And that's what we see the opportunity is going forward. We've got the aspiration to get to a 10% operating return. We weren't quite there in the second half of the year, but we've made really good progress towards getting to that level. So I think the targets are clear, they've been well communicated, and we've demonstrated in the second half of the year that with further leverage of the resource, we can get there.
Yeah. Well, that's a perfect segue then, Adam, to talk about the sort of the longer medium-term targets. Can you just take us through, first of all, just briefly what they are and how you came up with them, and also how should investors think about, deliverability, or how are you going about, continually doing that, achieving it, sort of like, through the economic cycle?
So let's start in the long range and work back. I think that's probably the easiest way to do it. So we have a long-term aspiration to be able to deliver better than 10% return on sales and better than 10% annual growth through organic growth every single year. That's where we want to get to. And obviously, we're not at 10% return on sales yet. That's why I say it's out there in the long term. If I come back a little bit closer and talk about, the next 5 years, our 5-year plan is to double the business, double the revenue of the business.
Organically.
Well, through organic and two other levers. So we'll talk about that in a minute. The real challenge with saying, we're going to double the business.
It's cheap.
We're a people business. We're a project-based business. And although the market is out there to go for, we can see the opportunity. Doubling the business means doubling the number of technical people in our company doing that work. And that is not an easy thing to do when the major demand driver is labor shortages in our customer base. So, we have to recognize the irony in that, perhaps. When Will and I talk about, some of the things that we've achieved in 2023, obviously, our investors are very interested in the outcomes, but I'm really interested in the things that drive that and our ability to recruit technical people and to drive more technical hours through our projects, is a key indicator of that ability to sustain growth and get to that doubling. So that's where we want to get to. If I come back a little bit shorter than 5 years out, we see an opportunity. We see an opportunity to double the profit of the business over the next 3 years. And I say that really slow because that's a significant ambition. Now, the levers that do that, there are three levers that we're pulling. The first is organic growth, and we've made some really good progress with that in 2023. You can see that in the numbers. Mm. The second lever is acquisition. You know, we've grown through acquisition in the past. We acquired a business in 2019 and another business in 2020, and we are always on the scout for new businesses that would fit the kind of strategic aims of the group. It's not about just bolting things on for the sake of scale. We're not looking to grow into market sectors that we don't know anything about. You know, we've got plenty of opportunity in food and beverage, healthcare and clean energy without doing anything outside of our sectors. And we're not looking to, you know, to stray into a territory or a region of the world that we don't really operate in today. We're a global business, but the bulk of our business is done in North America and Western Europe today, with a scattering through Asia. And we're not looking to change the geography of what we do. So what are we looking to do? Well, that lever is all about the technology play and being able to offer a full line solution to our customers in the future. You know, today we do a bit of assembly. We don't assemble every product in the world. We do some pretty good secondary packaging machinery. That's putting things into cartons. If you like Mars bars, it's putting Mars bars into the boxes that you might put in the Mars ice cream bars in the freezer. And we're pretty good at putting those cartons into larger corrugated cardboard cases and trays, and then stacking them onto pallets for distribution. But there are gaps in what we do. And increasingly our customers want to be able to work with one company who can provide a full solution. And the quickest way for us to do that, and the best by far, is through acquisition. So we're looking, but we will only buy companies that fit the bill and when they come for sale. And of course, you know, that timing means we're somewhat dependent on those companies coming to market. So that's the second lever. And the third of three levers is clean energy. And this is potentially a very big play for MPAC. And we've made some good progress on that stream in 2023 as well. So those are the ways we're going to get there.
Yeah, and just on that big energy, can you just sort of like drill a bit into that one? Is that making sort of packaging machines for sort of like, you know, batteries for EVs or for battery farms? You know, how should investors think about the end product? Obviously, I could visualize a Mars bar and a contact lens, but I'm difficulty to is it sort of car batteries and that sort of stuff?
Yes, it is all of those things. And maybe a step backwards from it, really. When companies make a battery, you know, they make the cell itself. What they're doing is they're taking a long roll of anode material and a long roll of cathode material, and they're putting some kind of active component onto that, and then either rolling it or stacking it to make a battery, to make a cell. Mm. And that cell has to be, you know, contained in either a little cylinder like the little AA batteries that you might buy in the shops, or these pouch cells or prismatic cells. The machines that do that in gigafactories around the world, if you're Tesla or you're producing for Duracell, whatever it might be, those exist. But battery technology is changing very, very fast at the moment, and there are new non-conventional types of chemistry and new non-conventional types of cell that are being created in laboratories all over the world. Building them at lab scale is one thing. Scaling them up to production volumes and the production quality that's required is quite another. And those jobs can't be done by existing conventional machines often. So you take that MPAC ingenuity and the innovation that we bring to these kinds of problems, we're finding our teams are really good at figuring out how to help companies who have a new design for a battery or new chemistry they want to introduce and have proven it at lab scale, and they want to scale it up, prove it at some kind of industrial level, and then build gigafactories. And that's exactly what we're working on today, is those machines for those kinds of activities. And then, you know, we already have a couple of customers that we're working with today on those activities. So it's fundamentally making the cells that you and I would buy either in an electric vehicle or in a home storage system or whatever it might be.
And just, I know you can't for commercial reasons tell me, you know, sort of like what the actual details are, but just for, to say, for instance, with Freya, et cetera, each particular site, what sort of like quantum in terms of revenue are we talking about with a packaging machine for a factory of that size? Because you've obviously got to a stage whereby I think they're opening the doors or working in Norway, and then they're commissioning the facility out in the States.
Well, yeah, I was in Norway last week, and with the team in Freya, looking at the line there, and you know that's a qualification plant that the team are putting together. It's not a gigafactory,
right?
And Freya's intention is that once they've proven the technology in the customer qualification plant in Norway, and that's they're on track to do that in half one this year. You know, their intention is to start the process of building gigafactories around the world. They've already named a site in Georgia in the US. For their first gigafactory, and they have grand plans beyond that. A gigafactory is an easy thing to say and a hard thing to define. it is certainly a factory that runs at a higher rate than the customer qualification plant in Norway, and it probably has more than one line. The line in Norway is a single line for production. A gigafactory might be, you know, 1, 2, 4, 8 lines. So it's quite a hard thing to answer your question with anything that would be anything other than misleading, I think, for your viewers. So I'm not going to. And,
yeah, okay.
And I think, you know, I take that forward into the way we project our financials as well. You know, I talked about three levers for the business. When we talk with our analysts about our projections for the MPAC business, we focus on the organic growth. We can't make predictions about the companies that we'll acquire until those deals are done, and we'll announce them, you know, at the right moment. And we can't make predictions about clean energy and gigafactories until those orders are placed. So our forward projections don't include anything except for booked orders in that space. So I'm not sort of flippantly, you know, ignoring your question. You know, I really think we can't predict it. The important thing is that we're making progress on those activities. I'm really excited about Freya. I was really pleased to see Ilika and the UK BIC team have MPAC join them on the Faraday Challenge in 2023. We've started a piece of work with them on their battery technology, and we look forward to more to come in 2024.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Well, thanks, Adam, on that one. Just to highlight to investors, just how does that look through on a valuation perspective? I mean, I'm a particular investor, not in MPAC, but sort of like just experience and stuff. And you did an underlying EPS this year of 26p. I think the market's on sort of like, you know, high 30s, sort of 37, 38 for next year. You put a 14 times, 15 times multiple, you get over £5 on an organic basis, and that's still at a peg ratio of less than one. If you achieve your aspirational targets, aspirational underlined bolded, of doubling EPS in the next 3 years, then that'll be over 50p. So 15 times 50p, well, you haven't got to be a mathematician to get to £7.50. So that's a very aspirational, and you know, just something that the market can have a think about. The shares are currently trading about sort of like high £3, £3.70, £3.80. Okay, then, Will, well, you said Adam keeps setting this challenge down. And I guess that's probably explains, you know, the board has decided to just on the dividend to hold it, because there's so much internal opportunity to invest in that business and really grow that top line, isn't there?
Yeah, we see great opportunity for growth. The market we're in, food and beverage, healthcare, fantastic opportunities, and the opportunity Adams has spoken about in clean energy. So for the board, we see a better use for cash to help drive and access that opportunity with innovation, new product development, and accessing those fantastic markets. So that's the background to that decision.
Yeah, no, I understand. Can you just give us a bit also for the visibility on the sort of the order book and how much of that falls into 2024? Because I think it was closing order book was about 72 million pounds. Obviously, that's presumably a lot of the original equipment stuff, and then you've got repeat revenues you'd normally book, presumably 30 odd million for service revenues on top. Can you just talk through how investors can think about that visibility into the rest of this year?
Sure. So you're right, the order book we closed 2023, opened 24 with 72.5 million, and the vast majority of that order book will convert to revenue in 24. So based on the analyst forecast, that gives us a really good coverage. Circa 60% of revenue for 2024 is covered by that order book. And then, as you said there, the service revenue of 30 million plus a year has a shorter conversion time between orders, from order to revenue. So you can see quite a clear correlation of how we will get to current expectations of revenue in 24.
Okay, good. And then you did also talk up through with the pension side, because now as though you've just built up a big pension or counting pension surplus. I know you're still making contributions for the next 2 years, but and also this, you know, I know you've got a bit of spare land that you've been sort of like, you know, in the back burner, just sort of trying to sell on to residential out in Buckinghamshire somewhere.
Yeah. Okay. So the accounting surplus is clearly measured on a different basis to the actual deficit. We'll put the accounting surplus to one side. That's on the balance sheet. That's according to accounting standards, the way that is calculated. But you're right, we are still funding the actuarial deficit. The last valuation was at June 21, where the scheme was 94% funded. So every 3 years, next triennial valuation will be dated June 24. So we'll crack on with that as soon as we get past these results announcement. Clearly, it's going to take up to a year to finalise a new schedule of contributions with the trustees. But the MPAC scheme, like most defined benefit schemes, has benefited from changes in interest rates since that last valuation. So we are pleased with how the scheme, the position the scheme's in, the funding level, how it's progressed. There's still some way to go, but we're on track with the targets we'd set ourselves and we'd worked with the trustees with previously. Just because of the timing, these are longer term processes that we're involved in, embedded in here. So the more detailed update will come once we agree the schedule of contributions based on the 24 valuation.
Probably also important to say that it's a closed scheme now. So obviously that's a historical defined benefit scheme and it closed some time ago. So we've had quite a bit of time to get our thoughts around it and manage it.
Okay, good. And then just as we go forward with the strategy, Adam, how would you sort of like, you know, mark the business in terms of achievements of that going forward? Obviously there's the financials, but really the anecdotal information, you know, as you get a sort of like a feeling of how the business is energized and, you know, sort of like just so investors can then sort of like, you know, think that as we go forward, whether we're going to, you know, we're on track.
Well, look, one of the things that I get really excited about is the list of customers that we work with, and they are absolutely to die for. They are companies like Nestle and Mars and, you know, AstraZeneca and GlaxoSmithKline and so on. They're a phenomenal global blue chip customer base, and they're customers that we're very proud to be associated with. But not everyone buys from MPAC today, you know. And one of the things that we've been working very hard on through 2023 was to broaden our customer base and to find more customers. And why are we trying to do that? Well, there's a few things in there. So first of all, if we double the business, I don't want to double the business just by selling twice as much to the same people. Mm. We know that lumpiness is an issue for our business at the scale we are. And the way to solve lumpiness is through scale. You know, selling twice as many contracts to twice as many people is the way to solve that through scale as we double. So that's important for our shareholders. For new customers, obviously, if we win them, we're providing a better service than they can secure through anybody else that they could buy from. So it's good for our new customers. And why is it good for our existing customers? And that's really important, you know. Our existing customers, we work with them for years. You know, we have sold over 250 different lines to several of our customers. So these are companies that we work with decade after decade. And one of the reasons they keep coming back to us is customer service and the way we support those products, and the fact we've got the same engineering base today as we had, you know, all those years ago when they first placed their first order with us. And how do you retain engineers? How do you provide that sustained long-term support? You've got to keep your engineers engaged and busy and developing. And the best way we can do that is to win new customers and keep them highly utilized and stretched and thriving. So it's really good for existing customers. It's good for our new customers. And it's good for our shareholders. And that that measure is really important. In 2023, we secured a 37% of our order intake was from new customers, new to MPAC, or divisions of large multinational companies that we've sold to one of their divisions, but not to this other division, this new division for us. So there's a lot of good progress there, and I'm really excited about that. I'm probably, you know, probably more excited about the subset of those who are multinational companies who we think will come back year after year after year in the future with more lines. You know, we work with mum and pop shops who might be automating, you know, a facility for the first time. And once it's done, it's done. And we're proud to do that for those companies. It can be transformational for them. But the ones that will, over the long run, make a really big difference to MPAC's growth rate are those multinational companies that want, you know, line after line as they grow their footprints on a global basis. So that's exactly what we're focused on doing.
What about sort of like bringing in the innovation, increasing the IPR percentage of your sort of your revenue? So you do your volume, but also you up value. So it's a win-win for you and the customer. They get more for effectively slightly higher price, but a lot more in terms of, you know, productivity, efficiency, speed, reliability, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the overall equipment effectiveness is always something our customers look for. They want speed down the line, of course, but they also want a reduction in waste. You know, they want a reduction in downtime of the line, and all of these things combine into the overall equipment effectiveness. One of the things I'm really interested in is that number Will skated through very, very quickly earlier in the conversation. You know, he mentioned 30% of our revenue from services. We've been driving to try and get to 30% of our revenue from services for many, many years. And, you know, we just got to that point in 2023. Actually, over the whole year, the average was 28% of our revenue from services. And that's a huge step up from the year before. It was 22%. And that's a huge step up from the year before that. So it's been a trend. And you know, services for us is not just installing, commissioning new lines and field service support and spare parts. It's also modifications and upgrades to existing lines to do some of the things that you've just been talking about. So that innovation, the ingenuity that goes into that is really important to us. And I would say that almost every line we do has some element of innovation to it. You know, no two products are the same. No two specifications for a factory are the same. So innovation is right at the heart of what we do, you know, not just in clean energy. It's easy to talk about that. But in, you know, in every single aspect of what we do, innovation is really the reason our customers choose us.
Yeah, well, that will certainly keep your engineers and your R&D team pretty busy for the next few years, that's for sure.
Certainly will.
I know. Okay, then, Will, just to finish it all off then, in terms of future news flow for investors, I guess the next sort of trading update is going to be at the AGM, is it?
Yeah, there'll be an update at the AGM, and then we'll typically give an update just after the half year, first, second week of July.
Brilliant. Okay, well, thanks again, gents. Massive congrats on a really, really strong year and a positive outlook. Huge order book there. So that's definitely give you a lot of give investors a lot of reassurance and coverage in the top line and bottom line going forward. So thanks again and big congrats.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you, Paul.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want with PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards, so you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.